joined on the program by Morris Mizalowski, who describes himself as a business futurist. And the reason his little media release got my attention was because it said half of all children starting kindergarten this year will not be able to find work when they finally finish school in 2030. And I've mentioned many times before that I believe one of the things that we're greatly underestimating at a time when we're getting all touchy-feely and we don't want to tell kids that they've made a mistake and all the rest of it, we're actually letting our kids suffer as a result. I've said many times before, never at any other time in human history has an education been so important, simply because we've become far more technological than we once were, even 30, 40 or 50 years ago. So what sort of future are kids going to inherit? And I've also talked about the fact that when you look at many children who are clearly underachieving and not achieving anything of any significance at school, would there ever be employment for them in the future? If you look at the arguments of people like Morris, you might come to the conclusion that the answer is no. I, as you may well know, have also asked the question before, are we going to be in the position in the future where we may have to teach some children to be able to accept that they will never be gainfully or meaningfully employed in their life? And Morris Mizalowski joins us on the program right now. Hi, Morris.
Hi, Chris.
What sort of future do we have for some kids, and more importantly, how do we make sure that the future isn't as bleak as perhaps your article suggests?
Well, the article headline may say it's bleak, and I do accept that, and it's bleak because if we continue with what we do now in our education system, they don't stand a chance. If, however, we evolve ourselves, then there is hope for all of our children, as there is with us, because the world that we've left for them is so vastly different from anything you and I grew up with.
Well, there's no question about that, but it does appear to me that there's a couple of things within the education system. One, it seems to be very reluctant to embrace change. That's my first observation. Whether it's correct or not, we'll come to that in a moment. My second observation is that the teaching profession as a collective seem to be very, very resistant to not only change, but anything that wants to put them under the spotlight and say, what sort of job are you really doing educating kids? Teachers' unions and teachers' groups and the like tend to get very, very antsy about stuff like that.
Yeah, to me, it's really the system and our culture that's to blame more than anything else. I've seen and worked with some great teachers. I accept what you're saying. Certainly there is a group of people like that. But it's the system, I think, and the way that we think about what education has to be that truly isn't allowing it to evolve. Our system was built on the notion of the Industrial Revolution. It made perfect sense. In those days, we had to teach our children about our culture. We had to teach them enough so they could get a work. And the likelihood is that the work that they got, I'm a baby boomer, so I'm speaking of me, was most probably the job I was going to keep for life. Teach me once, it was rote learning, know what he has to know, get him to a point where he can prove it to people, get him into a job, 40 years later get him into a pension. That world's totally gone. Our kids need to constantly be teaching themselves stuff. The Australian Bureau of Statistics tells us that these kids, the ones going into kinder in the next couple of weeks, coming out in 2030, will have 6 careers and 14 jobs. They'll live to 120 and they'll work till they're 90.
Work until they're 90?
Well, they'll have to. I mean, if we're living to 120, they'll work till they're 90. Now, work for me, I don't believe 9 to 5.
But here's the big question. How many people would actually want to do that? I mean, I can accept that into the future we may be capable of doing that. But I will ask, even of future generations, how many people will want to do that? And can I also dovetail that question? You're talking about having 6 different careers. I'll put it to you that there are going to be technologies and jobs emerge into the future that you and I could not conceive, and possibly we've only seen those jobs as some sort of fancy in science fiction.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I say that 60% of the jobs that they'll be doing haven't been invented, the industries haven't been thought of, and if they have, they're science fiction. A report came out last week from the World Economic Forum that went even further and said by 2020, they thought that 30% of the tasks that we'll be doing have not yet been invented, and that's 5 years from now. So I absolutely agree with you. But when we talk about this notion of working till 90, we're talking about a very different landscape. We're not talking about one linear job through all of that. 9 to 5, as we know, it's only going to be one way that we'll earn income. And I think the vast majority of people will actually have multiple income streams. Some of them will be what you and I might consider to be fixed, Others will be transitory. In other words, there'll be things in today's vernacular, like an Airbnb where we might rent out a room, or we might jump into an Uber for a couple of weeks because we need some extra money. We'll ebb and flow out of it. And I'm not suggesting that by the age of 90 we're going to be working this 9-to-5 regime that we have, but we will need to somehow get income for all of those years, because we're still talking about 30 years retirement after that.
How are we going to be with some people as jobs become more and more technological? Already, the evidence of some people being left behind, not gaining any sort of qualifications for the technological jobs that are required, people who traditionally in the past may well have filled unskilled or semi-skilled jobs. How are those people going to fare into the future?
We're still going to have a need for semi-skilled and unskilled jobs. There may not be as many, and the world will be very, very different. It's an unfortunate thing that we've seen throughout the millenniums of humankind. As we evolve technology, people with great skills might not be as pertinent as they once were and may find it difficult to get jobs. What we are seeing, though, that the ability to find income is now from more than just your local area. For those that are able to get into the digital space, there are opportunities to earn online. And there are also what's called a casualized workforce that's growing. And that are those people that are willing to do work that's task and project driven rather than 9-to-5. So it's not a perfect answer by any means, but there are multiple income streams. We will lose many jobs to technology, that's absolutely true. But there will actually be a net gain with the technologies that we have in new industries and new spaces. But again, that's why we need to make sure our kids not necessarily come out of school with the skill to be able to do them, but with the mindset that they'll constantly evolve themselves so that whatever comes before them, they're willing to learn how to do it.
With the emergence and the evolution of technology, the way it's been going, something tells me that in some cases, somebody could start a 5-year university course, and what they learned in year one could be redundant in year five. How are we going to get our education system equipped to be able to deal with that, so people realise that what they're learning now may not be relevant this time next year? Because in our technological world, that's more and more proving to be the case.
I'm a past academic. I lecture for 20 years through to postgraduate, so I'm guilty of this. I can tell you on day one what they're learning is obsolete. They're learning about history, they're learning about things that industry used to do and the way it used to do things. And invariably, when they get to an employer, the employer says, "That's great, but now we're in the real world. I'm going to teach you what you need to know." Now, Henry Ford said that back in the 20s and 30s. So I don't think it's changed much, but this notion of having to teach our children the 3 R's, I think, isn't as important as it once was. I know people are going to scream about this. I'm not saying we don't do that, but I'm saying it can't be all that we do. I talk about the 3 C's as possibly being more important than the 3 R's. And the 3 C's for me are the underpinnings of not only education but also employment moving forward. And they're quite simply the ability to be able to communicate, and that's both to speak and to listen. And remember that we're working in a world that's...
Well, that's something that people are arguing, that certainly the younger crew are able to do less and less because they've allowed technology to take over for them.
I actually think they're getting better and better at it. I take the opposite view. I understand why people say that. But communication now is fractured, meaning that we communicate in so many spaces. There was once this need, a ripe need, for us to be able to communicate as you and I are now, to be able to read and to write, and that's still obviously important. But our kids now live in a digital space, so as well as those skills, which are absolutely important...
Yeah, but many people claim that one of the things people can't do now is vocalise and communicate in a vocal sense well. It's one thing to be able to write to each other, it's one thing, for example, to be able to send each other a text or an email, but of course it's a vastly different thing to be able to communicate with people one-on-one. For example, even the conversation that you and I are having now, one of the things we can't do is see each other's body language. So our communication, I guess, is tempered by that fact. You can't see what I'm doing, I can't see what you're doing, so the only thing we have to go on is tone of voice. If we see each other face to face, obviously we're going to communicate differently because to a certain extent we're going to take some body cues from each other. And if, for example, the only way we've communicated is using texting on a smartphone or something of that nature, that surely is going to inhibit people's ability to communicate one-on-one with people.
When you look at people that are using that space, they actually are able to communicate. They're able to use tonality, not body language, but virtual language as well. It's by the way they structure. It's by the grammar, which you and I would not accept as grammar, but to them it is. I often use the thought of Shakespeare. When he wrote, he was writing in the vernacular, and that was seen to be very common and vulgar, and today it's held up as high English. What we're seeing is the dictionary evolve. We're seeing a new way of communicating. And I actually accept your point that we don't know how to communicate well, and today's children are having more difficulty, which is why we need to ensure our education system actually gives them the tools to do that. Because not only are they doing the things that you're speaking of, but they're now working globally. They're working in different time zones, in different culture zones, with different expectations. And they have to know how to manage and get their opinions heard, and also how to be able to listen to other people as well. That's why I think communication to me is one of the important three C's.
Are we also devoting too much time in schools? And this seems to be a modern trend where, for example, kids might be lacking something at home. For example, parents aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, or kids are missing out on food and nutrition or something of that nature, and suddenly the school is expected to fill that void. Well, given that a school only has a set number of hours in each day, the more responsibility you place on the school, the more tasks you want the school to do, logic dictates that if you increase something, something else has to decrease. Will we at some point have to be frank and honest and say, this is the responsibility of schools? For example, if there are social or other issues that are lacking for some children, then there are other people and other departments that are going to have to look after those issues, because we can't use the speed of the advancing army principle and drag every kid back simply because some kids in the class are being neglected by their parents.
And that's why I come back to the thought earlier of it being culturally we've got to change, because I agree with you. We're overburdening our teachers and our schools. We're expecting so much of them, and a lot of that does come from what was once taught at home by what was once taught by a society. And we've used the adage forever that it takes a village to raise the child. Well, that's what it should be now. It should be a village. I think the schools are overburdened. Their curriculums are too tight. But we also need to look at the way that we're teaching as well.
How are we going to bring about that change? Because the way the basic administration of the school system operates, it requires this structure. I suppose in essence arguing for an elasticity that certainly the bureaucrats responsible for state school systems just don't have. I mean, bureaucrats are not the most elastic people at the best of times, but in education they tend to be quite rigid. How are you going to bring about this elasticity?
By these conversations, because to me I absolutely agree. To me the education system is like toothpaste. It's all pushed through a tube and there's only one way it can come out. A child that's not able to show evidence of her or his ability by completing an exam is seen to be a fool, somebody not capable of. But it may be a learning difficulty, it may be because they're not able to cope in that situation. There are lots of reasons why they may not on paper have seen efficient at what they were taught, but in real life are wonderful at what they do. And our education system now espouses the three C's. But everything it does to mark children, to be able to say they've completed or they've finished or they've learned, is squeezing them back into that toothpaste tube. And that doesn't make sense. So the only way we can alter it is, again, through these conversations, bringing them up, going back into a culture which says if we want our children to, in fact, be part of this innovation nation that Turnbull and others are talking about, then we must give them the tools to do that, and we have to allow our education system to change.
Morris Mizalowski, it's always a pleasure, and thank you so much for talking to us.
Look forward to the next time.
Morris Mizalowski is a business futurist.